Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal, Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about, of course, various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. I hope you enjoyed our show last week. We had a very interesting guest. His name is Aaron Kaplan, and he's just released a book which is about Roswell, actually, and parts of it are about Roswell, parts of it are about various encounters and how they can be interpreted as religious events and so forth. And we had a very interesting conversation, and remember, all the shows are archived on the BBS website, so if you didn't get a chance to watch the show, you should check it out. It's a pretty interesting guy. And tonight we're actually doing another show about Roswell, and I'm very, very excited to have our guest on tonight. He's written a fascinating new book, which I've read with great interest, and it's called Alien Interview. Actually, he's the editor of the book. He presents the notes that were sent to him by a nurse named Matilda O'Donnell McElroy, who claims to have been involved in the events at Roswell, including face-to-face conversations with the alleged ETs. It's a fascinating book, and it's, I think, unique in the field and presents a whole new chapter to Roswell and what may have actually happened there. So I'm very excited to have our guest on tonight. His name is Lawrence R. Spencer. He's the author of The Oz Factors and is the editor of this new book, which is called Alien Interview. And I want you all to give a nice, warm welcome to our guest tonight, Lawrence Spencer. Lawrence, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, this was going on the internet and kind of going through some of the new UFO books that I saw getting published, and I saw this one and it caught my eye. I'm like, wow, you know, this looks kind of interesting. I'll have to, you know, get this one. And, you know, it really kind of had a deep impact on me. How did you get involved in, you know, or interested in UFOs and this type of research?
Well, Preston, I'm glad you mentioned that I'm the editor of this book. I'm not the author, as the book clearly spells out. I just received your list of questions, too, and your first question is very relevant. It asks, how did I come about the source of material for the book? The material that's published in the book is published verbatim in the form I received it from a lady who was a nurse stationed at the Roswell 509th Bomber Squadron in 1947. And this was the air base that was the home base for the bomber unit that dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Right.
In 1946. So she came to the base subsequently, after that time, I gathered. The way I got involved was, as you know, I'm not a researcher. I'm not a UFO buff or a researcher and have relatively little background in that field. It's not been a field that was of particular interest to me, probably any more than anyone else. I was researching a book, the first book that I wrote, a nonfiction book called The Oz Factors. And that book has to do with the genesis of how we think in Western culture and the history of Western culture and the dichotomy of worldviews between Western civilization and Eastern civilization. And it uses the movie script for The Wizard of Oz as a kind of analogy to compare and analyze the way we look at the world. So in the course of my research for that, which was back in 1997, 98, just sort of parenthetically or by chance, somebody who I can't even remember who it was, gave me the phone number of a lady that they said they thought had been involved in the Roswell UFO incident. So just kind of on a lark, since that wasn't the main thread of my research, I called the number and And sure enough, she answered the phone. Which kind of surprised me. So I told her, I explained to her what I was doing, researching this book about the Oz Factors and what it was about and so forth, and asked her if she could give me any information about the events that occurred in Roswell. And she said no, that she couldn't discuss any of that with me, but that she was interested in what I was doing. So that conversation lasted maybe 20 minutes or so, and I thanked her, and subsequently I sent her a copy of the book after it was published a year or so later. And at that time, she was living near an Air Force base in Montana or Wyoming. I forget. It's mentioned specifically in the book. So apparently she read the book because about 10 years later, 9 years later, I received a package, a big envelope from her in the mail, mailed from Ireland. And I hadn't heard anything from her or about her since that time, completely forgot about it. Inside the envelope was a number of handwritten notes that she had written that accompanied copies, what appeared to me to be original copies of military transcripts from Roswell. And these transcripts were interviews with the one surviving pilot of the Roswell UFO crash. And together with those transcripts and her personal notes, which contained her comments and observations about the transcripts, were a couple of letters that she wrote sort of explaining, what the material was and how she came telling her story about it and her thoughts about it and so forth. So needless to say, I was. Anybody who reads the book would be incredulous.
Right.
I don't care how much you know about UFOs or anything else. I would imagine that this material, sight unseen, would seem pretty incredible to anybody. It certainly did to me. So anyway, I read it all through and took it at face value and so forth. And because of the content of the material, I really, really was at a loss for a long time as to what to do with it or about it. And lots of things went through my mind concerning the nature of the material and, the potential threat of being in possession of it. Maybe the military is going to show up at my front door and shoot me in the head or something. I had no idea. So I sort of assumed the worst possible scenario.
Did she say why she sent it?
No reason to risk my life, over any of this. I mean, who would? So it also reminded me a bit of the Majestic 12 documents that I had read about years ago that probably you're familiar with, I'm sure, is
sure.
That it's sort of reminiscent of that. You get this anonymous, well, in this case it wasn't anonymous particularly, but you get this roll of film that shows up in the mail and you develop it and it turns out to be pictures of these top secret, what are reportedly top secret documents, and the documents contain all kinds of really bizarre, incriminating evidence about the government and cover-up and on and on and on. So anyway, after about 6 months of pondering over it, I decided, well, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, grant her request or in the letter and publish the material exactly verbatim as is. And I try to edit it together in a way that was sequential and kind of made sense and put her notes into what I thought were the appropriate places, and then supplement the material with footnotes from Wikipedia, just straight encyclopedic footnotes that give a sort of a reference point to the various issues, times, places, names, events, and sort of see if I could validate or lend any credibility for myself initially, to see if any of this really stood up under the scrutiny of research. So I spent quite a lot of time doing that, and by the end of that process, I came to the conclusion that I could verify just straight off the internet just about everything that was contained in the book, including the names, dates, places, technologies mentioned, all these different things. The only thing that I couldn't verify was, as it turned out, was the actual name of the nurse who identified herself as Matilda McElroy. So, you know, I'm not a private investigator or anything, you know, so I don't have all the resources required to track down who this nurse might have been, you know, in her real identity. But in my subsequent research, I've heard from other people and discovered that apparently there were 5 nurses stationed at Roswell at the same time, and she would have been one of those nurses, and all of those nurses disappeared shortly after the Roswell UFO incidents, and it's been alleged by very credible sources that they all disappeared permanently. They were killed in a plane crash. Any number of stories, but nobody seems to be able to identify the actual names of these ladies. So, any of the ones. So, I kind of gave up on that part of it, and I said, well, whatever. I don't care. I'm just going to publish the material. People can just take it or leave it for whatever they get out of it, fine. I found that the material was very compelling, and like you mentioned, it really changed my mind and my viewpoint about a lot of things that I had taken for granted my whole life were really challenged and almost turned upside down by the material in the book. So I thought on that basis alone, I should just go ahead and publish it and write a disclaimer, which I did at the beginning of the book, saying, you know, none of this is my opinion. I'm not going to champion or defend or argue about it. I don't care.
Right.
Take it or leave it. If it's true for you, fine, and if it's not, I could care less. Don't bother me. And that's the stance I've taken with it ever since. And subsequently, as you know, it's generated a moderate amount of interest in people who care about UFO phenomena and that sort of thing, and quite a storm of controversy amongst UFO aficionados and so forth. So I don't really pay much attention to any of that, but anyway, I feel like that I did what I could to be responsible for granting her dying wish, so to speak, and publishing the book. So I hope that answers the question.
Oh, yeah. Is that why she sent you the notes then? Did she say why?
Well, in the letter, the letters that are published in the book, the last letter, I think it is, of the two, she said the reason she sent it to me was because she felt that I, because she had read my book, The Oz Factory, she felt that I could understand it and that I could be responsible enough to publish it and make it available to as many people as possible, which apparently that's really was her only concern, was to just try to make the material available to as many people as possible. Because at that time she was 83 years old and apparently passed away shortly after that, and felt responsible to not take this information to her grave. And frankly, in retrospect, I'm glad that she did, because not very many people have been forthcoming about if they had any knowledge of this information. Not too many people that I know of until very, very recently, I think in the past year or so, some of the astronauts have started coming forward and saying something about their knowledge of the government cover-up of UFO information and so forth. So, anyway, I think for her part, she felt, you know, she should do what she could to make it known.
Right. Well, she writes about that in her letter, how difficult it was all these years keeping it secret.
Well, you can imagine. I mean, in one sense, I can see how it would be difficult to keep a secret. On the other, from the other point of view, apparently she was in hiding and under sort of a government witness protection program that wasn't protection. It was protecting her from the government as opposed to her, you know, her being protected by the government. It was kind of like the gist of what I gather is that she was basically threatened and said, okay, well, as long as you be stay quiet, you can go about living a life in anonymity, but otherwise you're likely to not maintain your health.
Right.
Something
well,
to
is
that
the
effect.
Picture on the cover of the book, is that actually her?
No, that's not her. That's just a picture that I found of somebody who was a nurse kind of around that period of time.
Right.
Not the same rank. I mean, her uniform, the uniform of the lady in the picture is a uniform of a first lieutenant. Anyway, there wasn't any picture in the documents I received. The documents themselves I decided to destroy because, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't want to become the guardian or the champion of these documents that, you know, like the Majestic 12 photos. I mean, who could really prove for sure whether they're legit, you know?
Right. They'll always
I'm not
be controversial.
A forensic scientist or anything, and I don't want to become one either. On the other hand, I don't want people hounding me all the time about, well, show us the documents. Give us the documents. We'll buy the documents. And I just forget that. I'm just not even interested in any of that kind of stuff.
No, I'm glad you got the information out, and I think that's what's important. And what I found fascinating about the book was the characters that are in it were all, you know, correct and placed. You know, the names and the footnotes that you put in also were, I thought, very helpful.
Well, that's, I thought that too. I thought when I started going through and footnoting and I went, gosh, you know, these people actually these are real people. these are not made up, you know, these are actual people.
Right, right. So, I mean, I found it all very consistent, and even though the story does get, you know, as you said, incredible. The way she describes the military's actions and all the characters, as I said, that were involved, it all was very consistent and to me just seemed real. What can you tell us a little bit about what she actually what these notes say? I mean, she was apparently taken to the scene of the accident or to communicate with the ET.
What I included in the book, everything word for word, letter for letter, exactly as it was given to me with the addition of the footnotes. So according to the letters and the notes that she sent, she was stationed at Roswell, and when the crash near the base was reported, she was asked to, I guess she was on duty or whatever, she was asked to accompany the security officer to the site of the crash, the base security officer, whose name is Cabot, last name is Cabot.
Right.
Anyway, so according to her notes, she went to the crash site and arrived while the aliens were still there, and apparently was asked to see if she could render medical assistance, because I gather she was the only medical person at the site and the only woman at the site. So she discovered that one of the aliens was still alive and was able to make establish communication with the alien, who turns out to be the pilot of the craft. And there were three others, members of the crew of the craft, who apparently died or didn't survive the crash. So she was able to understand telepathically the communication from this pilot, and nobody else was able to get anything. You know, I mean, the pilot, as you learn when you read the transcripts, the pilot didn't have any way of communicating verbally because it doesn't have didn't have a biological body, doesn't have a mouth and nose and voice box and all of that sort of thing, and communicates only by telepathy. So for whatever reason, she was able to understand this communication at least enough to get that the being or the pilot was communicating with her. So she told the security officer this, and he checked with the other personnel at the site, and nobody could get anything or understand anything. So she was, after some discussion, it was decided that she should accompany the pilot back to the base and stay with the pilot. I mean, partly, I guess, because she was a nurse, and partly because she said that she was able to understand or communicate. So as the book goes on and her letter continues, you begin to realize that, as it turns out, she's the only person that was able to communicate with the pilot, even though they brought in later on a number of authorities from all over the world who were specialists in psychology and telepathy and paranormal phenomena and all this sort of thing, and no one else was able to establish any communication. So, long story short, they brought in a fellow who was a specialist in language, in foreign language communications, who had been a specialist for the military, I guess the Navy, during World War II. And he figured out that they could actually teach the pilot to speak or think in the English language, which obviously it didn't before, because it's
right.
Not even from this galaxy. It's from some other galaxy, far, far away sort of deal. Anyway, so he figured out a way to teach the pilot how to read and think in the English language, after which time the strength of and clarity of the understanding of her ability to communicate grew and sufficiently so that she was able to interpret to the intelligence officers and military people who had come in to the base to participate in an interrogation process. They formulated a number of questions for her to ask the pilot in English, and she passed those questions on to the pilot, and the pilot responded, and she reported all of those answers in English to a stenographer or transcriptionist who typed it all up. And those
right.
typewritten transcripts are what are published in the book, and that's what she had been able to get away with copies of. So the questions that were asked and responded to were formulated by the military themselves or intelligence officers for the government, and her responses to the transcriptionist are what are primarily the content of the book. So that's when it all starts to get really, really interesting, because what the pilot has to say about everything is definitely
controversial,
what's of interest, you know. I mean, her comments, I mean, she comments in various places about, her comments are pretty, you know, mundane and sort of it all. You can tell that during the course of the interview, it all seemed pretty wild to her, too. I mean, she's just a 20-something-year-old Army nurse or Air Force nurse and Catholic and Irish, you know, Irish Catholic, and so this is all pretty wild stuff
right,
for her,
right.
along with the rest of us. So,
well,
anyway,
I was fascinated by the way she wrote her notes and the way she her impressions of what the alien was saying, because she never insisted that it was one thing or the other. She just gave her impressions, and sometimes said, you know, it could be, this is closest to what I can come up to with what he was trying to say, but it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Might not be quite exactly it.
Yeah.
Like the domain, which I think was the word that the alien used to describe the alien their civilization.
Yeah, it's the word that she used to interpret the idea.
Right.
Anyway, you know, that's part of the thing that's kind of interesting about the transcripts, is that every bit of this information comes to us from her. You know, and if you believe that her ability to receive and interpret telepathic communication from an alien being is is possible or accurate, then if you buy that premise, then you can sort of buy the rest of the material. But initially, for me, that was a pretty big stumbling block, you know, I don't know anything about telepathy. I can't communicate telepathically. I mean, I have some idea personally about intuition, and I'm sure the phenomena is
pretty well
real
established.
Or whatever, but it's not part of my personal experience. So like everything else in the transcripts, it's like, well, who am I to say? And that's part of the reason I decided to publish it the way I did, with no commentary or evaluation on my part. I said, okay, well, I'll just put it out there, and I'm sure there are lots and lots of people out there who would read this who would have a far more well-informed point of view about this than I do, because, you know, I'm no authority on these things.
Well, I have to tell you, I've read all the Roswell books. Not all of them. I mean, there's 100 probably, honestly, there is. But all the major ones I've read, about 10 or 20 of them. And this fits right in there in pretty much every respect. I mean, there's nothing that says that's, you know,
well, in the past year and a half since I published the book, I've gotten emails from all over the place, from people who really are authorities and, you know, have studied this for years and years, and they seem to say the same thing. They seem to say that all the research that they've done and anecdotal information that they have and documented evidence and whatnot seems to indicate that by and large, the content is accurate, at least as far as the you know, the time and the people and the places and, you know, the kind of the hard factual type information seems to stand up under their scrutiny. So, you know, that's fine. I'll take their word for it. And to me, it kind of doesn't matter one way or the other, because personally, I think the whether or not anybody can prove, and I say this in the beginning of the book, whether or not anybody can, quote, prove or disprove the material is kind of irrelevant. It's the content of the transcripts is, I think, kind of supersedes proof. It's very kind of subjective, and just hundreds and hundreds of people have sent emails saying, you know, this really moved me from an emotional or philosophical or spiritual point of view, and transcends, you know, all of kind of my educational understanding of things as I've been told they're supposed to be. So, and that was my experience, and that was mainly what compelled me to publish the materials, that I felt like you said, I felt that the content is more important than just a bunch of dates and places and names.
Right. Well, it has a way of growing on you as you're reading it, and you're right, it does hit you on a gut level. It really, I mean, my own personal experience, it shook me up a little bit after reading it.
Oh, me too. I was very disturbed by some of the, you know, I mean, well, when you get through toward the, as you go along further and further in the book, you realize that the point of view of Earth and the origins of life forms and people on Earth and so forth are not as warm and fuzzy as we would like to believe they are. You know, human beings tend to be extraordinarily egocentric and self-centered, and, you know, we're the ultimate species. We're the essence of God's creation and all of this sort of thing. And then you find out, according to the transcripts, that it's almost exactly the opposite of that.
Yeah, it really gives you a sense
we're kind of the lowest of the low, and the reason we're here on Earth is because we were sent here, and we're on a prison planet, and not only are aliens not visiting us, they're avoiding us like the plague for a variety of reasons. And that's not exactly what you were told in Sunday school.
No. And
that,
how old
is
the alien?
Very disturbing. I mean, I have a lot of I have a hard time trying to think with that.
That was another thing that shook me up about the book, was that when the alien told its age, it was like what, 4 billion years or something like this.
Oh, I don't recall, but it's some extraordinary. Well, I mean, the understand that they're their existences in the form of their spiritual being, as the alien, the pilot says, well, everyone is essentially a spiritual being. We're all have a degree of immortality as spiritual beings because you're not a physical entity. You can't be destroyed or you don't die, but you can lose your memory of your previous existence, which is exactly the case of the population of planet Earth. We've been forced into a state of amnesia as part of the imprisonment process on this planet, so we don't remember who we are, where we came from. Is a pretty good preventative measure against being able to escape. If you don't even know you're in prison, how are you going to escape from prison?
Right.
So to me, I think that's one of the most powerful and compelling questions that I was left with at the end of having read all that. I went, okay, well, great. So here we are on this prison planet, and we have amnesia, and we can't remember where we came from or much less how to get back. Or even if we wanted to get back, would we want to go back to wherever we came from? And apparently we certainly wouldn't be welcomed by the powers that be in those planetary governments, or, you know, the phrase used in the book is the old empire, which is apparently the overall government entity that rules the planets in this part of the universe, not just galaxy, but part of the universe.
Right.
And this galaxy apparently is a relatively small part of that galactic government's empire, so to speak. So whereas the domain of whom the pilot of this craft is a member, are from an invading planet, or not planetary, but an invading force of beings who are taking over this part of the universe in, you know, just outright military conquest. And Earth and the adjoining space here are now part of its territory and under its control. And part of their duty is to supervise and make sure that it's not destroyed and that it's maintained for their future use, whatever that use may be. It's interesting you mentioned the age of the pilot. It's sort of like the time scale, the scale of time that the pilot describes in the transcripts is in terms of millions of years, trillions of years, billions of years. And I kind of, in thinking about it since, you know, over the last year or so, I've sort of come to the realization that these people or these beings aren't thinking in terms of minutes, hours, years, decades, centuries. They're thinking in terms of thousands, millions, tens of millions, billions of years. I mean, like, 1,000 years is just like the blink of an eye to them. It's just that's... A 5,000-year span of time is just not really significant. It's kind of
a blip
on the radar screen.
Right. Well, this is one of the reasons I really recommend people read this book, is it gives you a whole new perspective on not only Roswell, but on yourself and Earth and our own history, for that matter. So it's really quite
remarkable.
Yeah,
definitely the history of Earth, according to the information in the transcripts, is not even vaguely close to what we've grown up or what we've been educated into thinking that it is. In fact, the origins of life altogether are completely different than anything I've ever run across before. So it has quite a lot of very, very compelling things to consider after you've read and digested all this material. I mean, for myself, it's been about a year and a half now since it was published, and I've gotten lots and lots of feedback from people all over the world by email and so forth, discussed it with people, and it's really, really interesting that people either either completely discredit it or just debunk it, or you know, don't even want to consider reading it. There's a certain percentage of people who are like that, of course. I mean, in fact, I think Matilda says in one of her letters that nobody's going to believe this. It's just too unbelievable, too incredible, which is really, that's the most accurate statement you could make, I think, about it. It's just unbelievable. It's too far-fetched. It's too far-flung from our current reality and understanding of things. So to that degree, it's very, very easy to dismiss or discredit. But for those who actually have, who do take the time to read it, and it's interesting that almost uniformly people have a similar experience to what you and I have been talking about. It really changes things around in your universe, so to speak.
Exactly. And it doesn't really, like you said, it's not important whether or not this is true or not, because, I mean, the effect is the same. So it's a remarkable book that you've put together there. And so what happened towards the end of this? I mean, how many interviews did Matilda have with the CT, and what happened, what stopped it all from going on at the end?
As you read in the transcripts, basically the transcripts follow the day-by-day progress, and together with her notes and her letters and so forth, kind of tell the story of what happened from start to finish, and kind of a summary of the story is that this interview process occurred over a period of about 6 weeks, beginning in July, ending in the middle of August 1947, and during which time, as I mentioned earlier, the pilot was educated very quickly in the use of the English language, and you get the idea that the pilot is extremely intelligent, already understands fluently 300 and some odd other languages, just because it's been around for, like you said, for I forget how many millions or billions of years old. I mean,
right,
you got to
right.
learn some languages in that period, you know, during that, and particularly since if you haven't lost your memory, you know, and you still remember, then, but the pilot had never been exposed to the English language because she wasn't operating in this area, wasn't part of her mission. The other interesting thing about it is the pilot is, thinks of herself as feminine, or is represented at least by Matilda as being a feminine kind of spiritual entity, not a female per se. There's no the pilot doesn't have a biological body, so there's no sex involved. But I thought it was really interesting that the flavor of the spiritual essence of this being is feminine as opposed to masculine.
Right.
Which kind of adds its own kind of interesting twist to things. Anyway, so getting back to the interview process, the nurse begins conducting the interviews based on lists of questions that she's given by the military authorities and by the intelligence officers who have been flown in from all over to get her to ask questions. So she reports back the answers, and they're transcribed, and then the transcripts of those interviews are given back to the military to review, and based on the answers, they formulate new questions, which they give to her, and she asks those questions. And so that process went back and forth, apparently, for several weeks, until apparently the military begins to be rather alarmed by the answers to the questions, which indicate that the pilot is from a civilization that has an overwhelming superiority in terms of technology and military capability and all of that sort of thing. And, you know, you get the idea that, the military and their typical paranoia and fear-based mentality decide that this pilot is too dangerous to keep around, and they confront the pilot with the demand to sign off on a copy of the transcripts, authenticating that the information in the transcripts is factual and legitimate and so forth, and the pilot refuses to do so, saying that, well, you know, why would my signature or X on a page compensate for your inability to trust your own personnel? I mean, you know, your own soldier, so to speak, is telling you all this information. So, you know, why do you need me to verify what your own people are telling you? I mean, if you're that stupid, you know, my signature. I mean, she doesn't use the word stupid, but you get the idea that her disdain for that kind of attitude was such that she refused to cooperate. At which point, the military police rush into the interview room and carry the alien pilot down the hallway someplace and strap it down to a gurney, and psychiatrist who is very well practiced in the science of psychiatric coercion, electric shock, and all of that sort of thing, is administers a series of electric shocks to the body of the alien to in an attempt to coerce cooperation from the pilot, and in that process kills the body of the pilot, or as you learn at the end, the pilot actually leaves the body as a spiritual entity and goes back to its base, which is somewhere in the asteroid belt in this galaxy. Apparently the domain maintains a number of logistical bases on the planet Venus and in the galaxy, in the solar system, in the asteroid belt, and on the moon, and so forth. So the pilot exits the body. The body is now lifeless because there's no spiritual entity there to animate it. And so they declare that the body is dead, and forthwith Matilda is shipped out, away from the location, never to return, and nobody ever heard from her again for 60 years until she came forward with these copies of the transcripts that she was able to conceal and take with her from the base during the confusion of the MPs rushing into the interview room and capturing the pilot and rushing him off. She was left holding a copy of the transcripts that the alien was supposed to sign to authenticate. Apparently, nobody ever noticed that she didn't give the transcripts back, because it was a copy, I guess. It wasn't like the only copy. There were a number of copies. So, although it doesn't say that exactly, and I sort of assumed that, well, okay, why wouldn't they noticed that she had a copy of the transcripts? Well, anyway, so you have to take her word for it. Anyway, apparently that's how she came to have a copy of the transcripts, and she kept the concealed for 60 years and hidden and so forth.
It's an amazing story, but we're pretty much out of time, so we're going to have to wrap it up. But I do want you to give out your website and let people know where they can get a hold of this book.
Okay. The website is alieninterview.org, and you can read. I put some other little bits of information on the website about Roswell, and you can links to other people's websites about information concerning Roswell and so forth. But you can also order a book copy of the book directly from the publisher, or you can get it on Amazon or whatever is good for you. But I've also begun writing a blog about the content of the book that you can visit when you go to alieninterview.org. And based on other comments and feedback I've gotten from other people, I published a blog because I think there's a lot of continuing interest in the content of the transcripts and so forth that people seem to be continuing to be interested in. So for what it's worth, read it, and people should, you know, take it or leave it, think what they think about it. But in either event, I think it's, if you actually do read it, it's fairly compelling material.
I totally agree, and I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show and letting our listeners know about it. I think it's a remarkable book, and I'm really happy that you had the nerve to publish it. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
All right, everyone. Well, that is our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and tonight our guest has been Lawrence Spencer. We've been talking about his new book, Alien Interview. It's all about he's the editor of it, and it presents the notes as written by a nurse who claims to have been involved at the Roswell UFO crash. Check it out. You can get a copy of the book at Lawrence's website, which is www.alieninterview.org. There's all sorts of interesting information there in a blog that you can visit, so check it out. I think you'll find the book very compelling, and it's fascinating the whole way through and ends with a real bang, which is an amazing surprise, and I highly recommend it. And I want to thank you all for listening and hope you can join us next week when I bring another exciting guest on the BBS Network. Until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.